This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
I know you'll be alright, even when times get hard, and you feel like you're in the dark. You will see just how beautiful life can be when you soften your heart. You can finally start to live your truthiest life.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Truthiest Life. It is officially June, and that brings a big smile to my face because June is the official start of summer. It's also my birthday month, and it's just the beginning, the precipice of the slowness and culture that we don't typically live in commencing. More time with family, more time just being, and some of the added pressure of doing just falling to the wayside. At least that's how we envision it. We all know that this season goes really fast, and it's really hard if we think about it to really go from like our day-to-day during the year to summer mindset, especially because most of us still work during the summer, and achieving that transition is more than just a mindset change. It's a nervous system change. A couple years back, I came to that revelation that it takes doing things differently to feel them differently. And I thought of the Just for Joy June challenge. I never implemented it, but I'm implementing it now, and that's what matters. My birthday is June 30th, so I love the idea of putting some intention behind June and stepping into that new year for me as the most intentional version of me possible. That being said, I have never implemented anything for 30 days, so this is a true challenge for me. I usually steer away from any sort of challenges, usually because they come under the umbrella of diet culture or forcing yourself to move your body or eat a certain way, which sometimes can be a totally healthy thing, but oftentimes it makes something coming from a forced and disciplined place rather than a place of true self-love and self-care. But I'm hoping that this Just for Joy June challenge can be a little bit different. So what is it? Simply, it's challenging yourself every day to do one thing just for joy, not something that has anything to do with your work and not something that you would maybe ordinarily do. And each day of the week, so Monday through Friday, we'll tap into doing one thing just for joy. And you're really on your own for this, but I would love for you to tag me and share it with me and create a little community around it. And it can be something as small as having a coffee on your porch in the quiet before you start your day, to going to a yoga class or a walk or baking or even taking a nap. There's nothing that makes joy one thing for every person. So if one of those things sounded stressful to you, like if you'd hate to bake, you know, that's not going to be your joyful activity. But whatever it is, whether it's 30 seconds or an hour long, just indulge in it. Give yourself radical permission to be there, be now, without the mind doing what it does and stealing from us what we deserve in that moment. So that's the Just for Joy June Challenge. I hope you'll join me as we tap into slower, more gentler living and put a little bit of intent into this summer that we all deserve to slow down and live a little bit more in tune with our joyful selves. Okay, today's episode is absolutely life-changing. It has totally changed my life. And as I recorded it with Natalia Rachel, I was like, wow, this is why I love doing what I do. And I felt totally re-inspired after taking a little break from interviewing people because my headspace was, you know, largely focused on stuff going on at home. I felt so reinvigorated by this conversation because I get to talk to brilliant people and then share those conversations with brilliant people, all of you, and form this little community of all of us who are trying to understand ourselves better, not just in pursuit of self, but in pursuit of having better relationships with the world that we, you know, inevitably interact with, whether that's the people at home or in our jobs or just strangers on the street. If we don't know ourselves well enough or we are functioning from our trauma, as Natalia so well explained, we are perceiving, expressing, and relating sometimes from an untrue place, causing more harm rather than help. Natalia Rachel is the founder of Illuma Health. She's the author of Why Am I Like This? And as a therapist, she believes that the root of healing the world begins with healing our own trauma. And as somebody who's been in therapy my entire life, very familiar with trauma, I learned so much in this episode about why we do the things that we do. I'm totally fascinated by the concept of trauma bonding that she explains and its impact on our ability to be intimate. It goes kind of into that conversation of why we often feel repulsed by people that are so obviously good for us, and then why we're attracted to people that are bad for us. And if we can't relate to that, certainly you have a friend or a family member that, you know, falls prey to this. I really love this conversation because she really has a lot of unpopular opinions that I agree with and calls out a lot of things that are very commonplace in the healing and self-help world and brings attention to how they can actually be harmful to our own healing. Absolutely love, love, love this episode. It's one that I will be listening to a few times over to fully digest and untangle within myself so that I can truly show up as the true me, not the trauma impacted me, and make this world a safer place for all. I hope you love this episode, and I'll see you back here next week. Have a great start to your June. Welcome to The Truthiest Life, Natalia. I'm so excited to finally be sitting down with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I think we're going to have a beautiful conversation.
Yes, it's a long time coming. You know, I do not like canceling on my guests, and I've had to cancel on Natalia a few times because of life, and she's been so compassionate and kind, but it's not something that I like to do. But our schedules have been hard to match up because not only are you living in Singapore, but you are very busy changing the world.
Doing my little part, trying to anyway.
Well, actually, your Instagram name has the word change in it, and I'm going to, of course, link her below as usual. But why do you have the word change in your Instagram handle?
I think that's what we're all seeking, right? All of my work is about healing and creating social change. I think that they're symbiotic. And so essentially, I'm a change worker.
I've never heard anybody put it like that. So you are living in Singapore right now, right?
Yes. I've been here 6 years.
And you're from where?
I'm from Sydney, Australia. So I grew up there my whole life. And aside from a very short 9 months in France as a teen, Singapore's the only other place that I've lived. And it's been a miraculous journey of learning about myself, about culture, about systems and belonging.
Well, you brought up social change in what you do, and yet your title is a psychotherapist, correct?
I'm not a psychotherapist, but I'm a therapist. So my formative training is as a hypnotherapist and regression therapist. And I'm also trained as a craniosacral therapist, which is a kind of like a form of osteopathy. And then I've done a whole bunch of other stuff as well.
Yes, my husband's actually a doctor of osteopathy, and we love craniosacral work. But I apologize. I thought that your background was in psychotherapy because of largely in part of the somatic work that you do.
So I've studied many different somatic trainings, but it's not my formal qualification as a psychotherapist. But somatics is a huge piece, not only of my personal healing journey, but my professional journey and the way I write and speak and teach and just relate as a human now.
I relate to everything that you said. Although I have a formal, you know, talk therapist and I have my whole life, I think that a large part of our listeners come to me because of the various modalities of healing that I'm open to. And even as I, you know, I'm 35 and I've been in therapy probably since I was five for the first time. My parents put me in when my parents got divorced. I'm still learning like new things from each type of healing work that I do. So I very much appreciate your approach to healing and the various qualifications that you have, because I think that allows you to really help somebody from like a multidimensional approach.
Thank you for reflecting that to me. I think we are so complex. We live in many dimensions, you know, we're not so singular. And we love to put ourselves in boxes and polarize ourselves. And everything that I've explored, not only on my own healing journey, but traveling around the world to work and study, you know, I've traveled in Singapore, London, I've studied in Norway and Bali, like so many different diverse places and trainings. And so to me, it's allowed me to now see not only myself, but people, humanity in general through this kaleidoscope. And so now a large part of my work is about helping other people to bring their kaleidoscope into view, which will be unique, different to mine. But I think welcoming that complex processing and sense making is really, really important. So I don't believe in one modality is the way. I believe we need to welcome many, many perspectives and views and supports and see how they refract through us.
I love that. And I love your how you see the world through that kaleidoscope lens. It really helps to break up that singularity, like you said, and penetrate different parts of ourselves that in my experience are just dormant, but become awakened by different stimulus, and kind of all these different modalities that you talk about can kind of poke at these parts of us that are dormant or repressed or part of us somewhere, you know, deep down. Okay, so the social work that you are talking about, like we need social change. Is that what your focus is on right now? Or do you also work with individuals, or is that one in the same?
I work a little bit with individuals now, so less and less, but I still do see private clients 2 days a week. But a lot of my focus across all the many layers that I'm working is on helping us to better understand the nature of trauma, how it decontextualizes inside our bodies, our minds, our relationships, and then the communities, cultures, and systems that we create. So to me, when we explore our own personal blueprint and our own reason for being here and the ways that we have manifested our personality and our relational self, we're at the same time exploring the world that we have co-created. And so I believe that when we do our own healing work, we become the social resources that we've all been craving. So our embodiment of peace and power and purity is the template for the world that we want to create. So heal your trauma, change the world.
Okay, got it. That makes so much sense to me when you put it like that. From my own self-work as well, I would have never been able to put it in such beautiful language like you just did. But I've certainly found that my own work of largely self-compassion comes to mind has allowed me to live in a gentler, more receptive place, less combative, less refusing information that didn't previously fit with me. And on the social front, that makes me a better listener. And a better listener makes me able to understand experiences that are not mine. And when we do that, we realize that the world doesn't revolve around us. And there's a lot going on at the same time. So although my reality might look like this, somebody else's looks like this. And how can I help them or they help me? Am I like extracting your work and purpose correctly?
Absolutely. I think so many of us are very traumatized, and the way we perceive, express, and relate is altered because of that. And so when we heal, we stop seeing through the lens of our trauma and our suppressed emotions, and we stop projecting our past onto other people and turning others into perpetrators or to heroes. And we can contain our dysfunction and we can see other people for who they really are. And when we create that boundary around ourselves or that sacred line between us, that's when we can finally learn to show up and empathize and relate in ways that are helpful rather than harmful.
Okay, that speaks loudly. The word trauma and triggered is one that I deeply understand and will never tire of, but I have seen on social media and in many places that like people are getting tired of the word trauma and tired of the word trigger. So I would love to actually spend a little bit of time hearing your approach to what trauma is and how it affects our relationship with self and others, and how, although we might get tired of hearing this word, maybe that's because we don't understand the various levels of trauma and how multidimensional this word actually is. So what is trauma?
I think when a word becomes a buzzword, which has happened with trauma in the last couple of years, we can tire of it because it's being thrown around. My definition of trauma is when a past experience of threat that is over is living and breathing inside us now, and it affects us mentally, emotionally, physically, and relationally or dynamically. Trauma is largely unconscious and felt, so it's somatic in nature, and it speaks through sensations in the body and emotions, and it travels through communities, cultures, relationship systems. But just as trauma travels through this relational pathways, so does healing. So that's my understanding and definition of trauma. And most of us have some level of trauma. As with everything, it exists on a spectrum. It's not actually about what happened to us in the past. It's about how it's left unmetabolized inside us and the changes it creates in the way we perceive, relate, and express. So there's this whole big conversation about big T, little T, or you went through something really big and this person went through something really little, and therefore everything should be easier or harder to heal. And that's just actually not how it works. And the way we will metabolize or not metabolize traumatic situations depends on a number of factors. It depends on our physical and mental health at the time of or shortly after the trauma. But more importantly, it depends on the quality of our relationships. So we do best when we're sharing experiences. We're relational creatures and we're not meant to be alone. So if we go through something that's quite traumatic, but we have kind, caring, compassionate people that are going to support us and listen to us and care for us and not shame or minimize or gaslight us, we're more likely to integrate or metabolize the experience, and therefore it perhaps won't become trauma. Whereas if we're alone with it and if we don't have the capacity to process and make sense, then it's more likely to become trauma later on.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to unpack that even more, but this question just came up in my mind. Given that we are living much more individualized than collectively in this modern world, wherever we live, I guess not in some colonies that have maintained their, you know, tribal nature. But for the most of us, we are living separate from other beings. Do you think that the level of unmetabolized trauma, as you speak about it, has gone up because of the way that we are living? And I'm not even referring to the pandemic, by the way. I'm just referring to the times.
What a great question. I do think that we are meant to exist in community. And I do believe it's harder for us to metabolize not only individually, but collectively when we go through something. And that's why it's so important that we do create experiences of belonging and community. And what's very interesting is in the world of commerce and business right now, we're seeing a rise in community building and storytelling and membership models. And if you think back to a few generations ago, you wouldn't pay for that. It wouldn't be a business. It would be part of living in your closed community. And so it's really interesting to see that innately we know that that's what we need. But instead of just offering it to each other in these modern times and in this very commercial world that we live in, belonging has been commoditized. And I'm writing about this at the moment as part of my second book. So I'm very fascinated by how belonging now comes with a price.
That is going to be a very, very, very juicy book. And you are so right. People are just hungry for a sense of belonging. And the fact that we've turned it into something that fits well into a capitalistic culture is a whole, I'm sure, book that you are, you know, deconstructing. Nothing that I could even begin to sink my teeth into. But I've honestly never thought about that. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. And I will certainly be buying that book. Can you tell us a little bit about your first book, actually, as well?
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Can you tell us a little bit about your first book, actually, as well?
My first book is called Why Am I Like This? Illuminating the Traumatized Self. And it's 40 years of my lived experience of not only growing up in a very traumatic environment, but developing teenage mental health misdiagnosis and then the onset of this mystery illness as a young adult that lasted 11 years, and then going on this epic quest to heal. And so the book shares everything that I've learned on my journey and everything that I've made sense of in order to heal. So it's the kaleidoscope of a patient turned therapist. And so every part of the book, I share a conceptual sharing or philosophy for healing. I often share some of the science or psychology that's linked to it. And then I share a piece of my personal story where I've lived and learned, as well as some self-inquiry questions to help you get into your own curious mind and explore, and then a somatic meditation to help you get into your body and access a felt sense of healing and transformation. And the last part of the book is called The Laws of Peace and Power, and it's everything that I believe we need to live by in order to create a sense in the world where we feel like everything is well again and we are free and harmonious.
Well, we're obviously going to link that book below, but at what point in your life did it switch for you? You know, I think what's really cool about you as a therapist is you're kind of lowering that gateway or that door or that barrier that a lot of times, like, we don't see with therapists, which is talking about their personal life. And I think it's a different dance for each therapist and their comfort with that. But given that it is something that you talk about in your book and your work, I'm curious for you how you left trauma, as you called it, trauma body, trauma mind, from your youth and found your way back to comfortably living in your body. And I would just want to say really quickly, I know this is a podcast and, you know, you're listening to this audibly, everybody, but I'm also witnessing you. And there's something so distinct and mesmerizing to me when somebody is truly like dropped into their own body and comfortable in their own skin. And when I see you or feel you, whatever the word is, like it's there. And that to me is just like, I've got so many questions, especially because you weren't born like that.
Thank you for seeing that. It makes me feel very grateful. Thank you. It's been a journey. So there was not one moment. You know, I was sick for a very long time. I was trapped inside the medical system for about 17 years, 11 years of that, really in a physically awful space, medications, intravenous treatments, everything. And there were periods where I couldn't walk or use my hands. So I was really very, very, very sick. I was back then 40 something kilos, and I'm 70 kilos now in my healthiest, strongest form. So a real, real difference. You wouldn't recognize me to look at me. I think the very first moment where there was this huge change is when I somatized or associated. So when we have trauma, we live dissociated. So we're often living outside of our bodies, either sort of floating next to ourselves or just above our heads or up on the ceiling. And people often experience it like they feel not quite there, or they're blank behind their eyes, or it feels like they're watching their life, or their life feels like a movie. So that was my life. And I think while I was trying to get better from a dissociated state, there was no possible way to integrate or to come into my body, which is where I firmly live now. So I was trying all these things and nothing was working. And it wasn't until I started exploring bodywork and somatics that all of a sudden I associated. And when I associated or somatized, it was not in a trauma-informed way. And I was like plunged into my body. And all of a sudden there was this excruciating pain and all these flashbacks. So I was regressing and I was re-traumatized. And it actually caused all these really intense symptoms to arise. So my eyes swelled up. I got rashes on my body locked up, like I couldn't move. But there was this little voice, my spirit spoke to me and said, Natalia, these things that you're remembering, that you're feeling, this is where the healing lies. You need to be with and process them. And so I spent quite an intense amount of time learning to feel into my body, to feel into the emotions, to connect to the memories and find a way to release them. And it was not trauma-informed. It was messy. It was awful. But after 4 months of this very intense process, like I'm literally talking a few hours a day, all of my physical symptoms vanished. And the doctors couldn't believe that I was better because they told me, you know, if this illness that seemed degenerative doesn't kill you, the medication you're on will, because I was on 42 tablets a day at that time. And so all my symptoms were gone. At that time, I also decided to detox of all the medication against doctor's advice. And I do not advise that to your listeners, but it was part of my process. And so all of a sudden, this past trauma, this muck that was inside my body was gone. And I could start to see more clearly. And so that was the first big moment. There were some other big moments. There was also a piece around leaving my marriage. My ex-husband and I were together for 17 years, which is a really long time. There was a lot of goodness and love in our marriage. We built our careers. We had beautiful, healthy children. But because we'd got together when I was in such a traumatized mess, I wasn't me. And so there was something about needing to figure out who I was on my own. And so the time and space of learning who am I without being in this sort of enmeshed dynamic that was an amalgamation of so many past experiences was really important for me. And there have been many other moments. I think when I started to be on my own, I got really curious about the relational piece of healing trauma, which for me, it was kind of the last piece. So I'd done all this somatic work, I'd done all this psychological work and attachment work. But when I started to explore the way relationships and dynamics influenced me, and also what I was creating when I was bringing in my trauma, this was a huge, huge change in the way I experience and the way I live and the way I create. And so now it's that relational piece that I teach first, because I think it is the thing that creates the trauma and it is the thing that can heal the trauma.
Can you go a little bit further about what that entails?
So much of our trauma stems from harmful or oppressive or misattuned relationship dynamics. And so just as relationship is the root, it can also be the remedy. So when we get curious about the way we are relating, and not only the way we're receiving other people, but the way we're creating dynamics, we can create incredible multidimensional transformation. So I call this topic relational somatics. So we are physiological beings primarily. We are also primarily relational beings. And so when we start exploring how the self responds, reacts, and evolves in dynamic, we get really clear and we get really masterful. So we can learn when someone's giving us something that's really not helping us, but we can also learn when we're doing the same to other people. We're co-creative. So we're both influencing and being influenced all the time. And once we purify a lot of the trauma and the threat and the exclusion from our own system, not only can we show up with more congruity and intentionality, but we can also start to deeply see what other people are bringing to the table and learn how to do this dance where we make a beautiful life.
Well, I feel like we just took a really deep dive into like the meat of your work. Does that feel right?
Correct.
Great. I want to come a little bit back to the surface for a moment in case we lost anybody, or just to bring back, you know, the masses here who might be thinking, well, I don't have trauma. My life is really good. I believe that probably, correct me if I'm wrong, the truth of that would be that everybody has experienced trauma, and most likely most people have undigested trauma, as you call it. But you said that it lives in the subconscious. Our trauma lives in the subconscious. And I think that for a lot of people, it might feel like trauma are only those big T's. And if it's not the big T's, you know, something horrific happening to you, going through a natural disaster, something, you know, sexually assaultive or something like that, if it doesn't like fit into those major categories that we so clearly call trauma without argument, then I don't have anything wrong with me, and therefore I have no work to do, and therefore, like, why are we throwing this word trauma around? What would you kind of say to people about all trauma?
Whether we believe we have trauma or not, we're likely relating with someone who does. And if we're relating with someone who has trauma, then we are part of the experience of trauma too. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when we consider relational trauma, it can be as simple as having parents that didn't attune to us, that weren't there to listen to us and validate our feelings and help us remain curious and make life choices that are in line with our spirit. And so most of us in our generation didn't receive that at one level or another. And so many of us were taught, get on with it, smile, grin and bear it, do a good job at school, grow up, get a good job, earn good money, get married and have kids. That's kind of the trajectory. And for many of us, any attempt to say, well, that's not what I want, or I'd love to do this or that, was invalidated. And so, and for some people, shamed. But invalidation causes trauma. And so it may not express itself in these really huge ways, but when we have experienced this kind of relational trauma, it can often feel like we're not quite who we're meant to be, or we're not quite living the life that we really wanted. And many of us also feel like the me that we feel on the inside isn't really the me that's shown in the world. And so either it might feel like people see me in this really great way, but I feel like a hot mess, or it could be the flip side, people think that I'm a hot mess, but inside I'm this beautiful butterfly or bird. And so that's fragmentation. And so many of us who have this less easy to spot kind of trauma have these experiences. And it can often show up as feeling not really connected, even if we have a lot of relationships. Like, I don't feel like these connections feel like how it's meant to feel. Why? What's wrong with me? Or it may show up in just feeling mild anxiety all of the time, or a sense of apathy and listlessness and not being able to go for our dreams, or a sense of imposter syndrome, or a tendency to self-sabotage. So all of these things are symptoms of trauma. It's just that we tend to minimize them and say, oh, everything's going to be fine, and we bury our head in the sand. Or there's also the rise of the personality profile, and there are so many different ones. And so we like to categorize and say, well, I'm just like this, and this particular personality profile says that that's part of my character or my personality, so it's fine. But when we do that, when we categorize, when we label, when we accept, it's quite a dangerous thing, because we stop ourselves from getting curious and allowing ourselves to be evolutionary.
Can you just give one example of what a personality category is?
There are so many different ones, but like there's Myers-Briggs. The current popular one is Human Design. There are all these categories. I'm a projector, I'm a manifester, I'm an ENIFJ, whatever. And because this description fits me, then it makes it okay. And I don't need to change. I'll just try and create the best life possible within this box.
So you're kind of challenging that and saying,
I'm
when you put
it.
Oh, okay. Because again, I feel like you're just a step ahead of me here. So bear with me as I, you know, digest what you're saying. You know, I feel like, especially with social media, things like Human Design and all the personality types have definitely been on the rise of things that people know about and talk about. And my first understanding of them was that they give people like better understanding of themselves. So kind of like how we're like, oh, why am I like this, right? That's the, you know, your book, right? When you find out that you're a reflector or whatever, it's like, oh, that's why I'm like that. This person just doesn't understand me, but I am no longer going to stop changing who I am. Like I saw it as a good thing in owning kind of how you're wiring, which I'm sure to a level it is good to know about yourself, right? But if we stop there.
Correct. So I think it's great to be able to make sense of oneself. But I guess, how are these types any different to being given a mental health diagnosis? So I think that, you know, back when I got my diagnosis in my early 20s, I was relieved, but then I tried to make the best of it within the box I was given. And so whether we're talking about diagnosis or whether we're talking about personality profiles, I think it's great. These are all archetypes. So here are these set of symptoms or experiences. We think this is what's going on. I think when we say perhaps this is what's going on, there's a lot more freedom and space than saying this is what you are. So when you accept a diagnosis or a label as an identity, that's when things get a little bit dangerous, in my opinion. And I so welcome people to have different opinions, because I think that's really important for evolution and change. So I think it can be helpful to make sense of oneself, but I don't think that it's helpful to remain in a box. The danger is that we enable ourselves to stay exactly as we are and don't hold ourselves accountable to creating very deep systemic change. I'm just like that. And the reason we start looking for all of these labels is because we're wondering, what is wrong with me? Why am I like this? And I just think we need to go much deeper and get far more texture and complexity in our understanding of why we're experiencing in certain ways.
I love that. And we kind of breezed past it, but you used the word fragmentation. And can you go a little bit deeper as to what fragmentation is?
We are all fragmented, which basically means that we have different parts of our psyche or self that have different sets of needs and desires and dislikes and triggers. And actually, all of us, trauma or no trauma, are fragmented. We are complex. And it's our tendency to consider ourselves as a single self that actually causes us mostly to feel a lot of discontent and like perhaps we can't feel happy because we're not honoring these different parts of us. In the case of trauma, we experience what I label as trauma-born fragmentation. So, for example, just say as a young child, you're getting abused And during the face of that abuse, it's not safe to speak up and set boundaries. It's not safe to run away. There's nowhere to go. It's not safe to ask for a cuddle when you're feeling sad. And so all these parts of us that actually really want to express but can't suppress, they fragment and they suppress inside us. And then we develop what I call an external shell, which is a personality that feels safe to interface with the world from. So most of us are walking around with these shells that are personalities that are designed to help us survive and belong through and beyond trauma. And we carry them into life. But what happens when we're fragmented is either those suppressed parts of us, those are the ones that are being recurrently triggered or acting out and creating havoc in our lives. And so a huge part of healing is learning about our fragmented self and all the parts of us that didn't have a safe space to express themselves, have their needs met and follow their desires, and to allow ourselves to become more integrated in who we are. And it's one scary but beautiful journey.
Wow. And I've never thought about any of that like this. And previously, before this conversation, I thought I knew a lot, but turns out I don't, which is really cool because I feel like that gives me a lot to learn about as I continue to go through this.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You mentioned the word trauma bond when you were discussing fragmentation. You said that that creates a trauma bond. Did you mean that the person who's getting abused forms a trauma bond with their abuser, or the relationships that they then form in the world are through that fragmented lens? What exactly did you mean there?
I don't remember saying the word trauma bond. I can explain what a trauma bond is. Maybe I said it without thinking. A trauma bond is when we attached to someone from the lens of our trauma. And so when we enter a trauma bond, it's like our young traumatized self is trying to recreate the same attachment relationship, hoping for a different ending. And the issue is that when our child traumatized self or selves are attaching in a relationship, there's never a chance for real intimacy and real connection from our adult conscious self. And usually what happens when we're traumatized is we're seeking this relational repair or safety or attunement from somebody that really isn't able to give it to us, maybe A, because we're engaging from a child place, but often we will seek out people or characters that are very similar to past characters that just weren't able to give us what we truly need and deserve. So there are many people living in trauma bonds today.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when I think about when I was dating, the type of people that I was dating over and over again, and the same scenarios that would happen over and over again. And I truly didn't understand why. And when I look at some of my friends who are brilliant and beautiful, and they're going through, you know, these relationship reoccurrences over and over again, I can begin to kind of see a little bit of that happening for them. But I think it's like so interesting because until you start to have language for these experiences, you remain in them. When you hear you say the word trauma bond, you know, hopefully some of our listeners, like a light bulb's going off right now. And it might not be a good light bulb. It might be like a, oh, F, you know, this is me and this was the trauma that I grew up with. And this is why I seek out these types of relationships. And, you know, it might not be necessarily the most like aha good feeling light bulb, but all of a sudden it's a new doorway, an exit, or at least a lead to begin to chase, to learn more about yourself and begin to make change by healing first and then doing something differently.
I agree. And it's interesting, there's usually two different routes we go on with trauma bonds. So either we'll seek unconsciously to replicate the same dysfunctional dynamics, or we will so deeply not want to recreate it that we will run in the other direction. And so that's what I did when I chose my life partner, my ex-husband. I think I'd been so physically abused through my life that I chose someone that I know, that I knew would never, ever, ever, ever physically hurt me. But again, it's coming from a trauma reaction, right? It's not coming from this very deep bond to begin with. Of course, we developed one, but it was built on top of my unconscious choosing someone that I knew would never, ever hurt me. That's not necessarily the best reason to get into a relationship. So we'll either seek to recreate or to ensure that we do not recreate. And as we heal and become more conscious, we learn not to move in either polarized direction from our trauma. We learn to meet people for who they are and engage from a much more regulated place. So we're no longer projecting or transferring or replaying the past.
That makes so much sense to me. And going back to like the somatic work, I think that when you work through your trauma, your body ends up being a signal of this person feels really good for me, or they don't feel really good for me, or something in between maybe. But I know for myself, like it's only been the last less than 10 years, last decade, that I understood like that my body could have that bottom up approach. Otherwise it was top down, you know, and the body is so wise with who we feel safe with. But if we can't feel our bodies, our minds are going to be much louder and our minds are going to do exactly what you said, recreate the trauma bond or work really hard to not create the trauma bond. But either way, we're working off of the trauma because we're not working from the safe place in our body.
And another piece to that is that if we have unresolved trauma, it's likely that our nervous system is dysregulated and our wires are crossed. And so a good example of this is feeling intense chemistry for really harmful or unavailable people and either feeling zero chemistry or in fact a repulsion from safe, healthy people. So when we have these crossed wires, we'll tend to feel attracted to the people who are really not good for us. And we might meet really wonderful people in our lives, but we don't feel attraction. And it's actually because we have a lot of nervous system rewiring to do.
Wow. Like just a specific person in my life came to mind when you said that. And essentially this person, just, you know, for listener enjoyment, is always complaining about how they are single and alone and there's no significant other for them and nobody likes them and blah, blah, blah. Goes on a date and comes home from it and tells me that the person that they went on a date with, sorry, I'm being very vague. It's a personal person. So I'm just being as vague as I possibly can for respectful reasons. Anyway, they go on a date and they come back and they say, it was so great. They cooked for me. They, you know, we kissed and whatever. And I felt so taken care of. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's great. Did you, you know, send a text today? And they're like, no. And I'm like, why not? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, did you, you know, have a good time? They're like, yeah. And there was like nothing there. It made no sense to me. I was like, these are all the nice things that you've been saying that you wanted, but they were running from it. But this person also has, you know, a very obvious nervous system dysregulation, and I could imagine wires in the wrong place. But I, in that moment, I was just like baffled by it. But you just untangled that whole psychological phenomenon for me.
You know, when safety and care and kindness have not been the blueprint for our relationships early in life, when we're met with it, it will feel foreign or confronting. And if we have no map for what healthy care and connection looks like, it's very hard to lean into it. When we identify something as foreign, our unconscious nervous system will say, well, that's scary. Don't want to go there. I'm going to pull away. Or it might just be that our capacity for that kind of connection is very little. And so when I'm supporting someone to heal from this, it's about leaning in very small amounts and taking a lot of space and then leaning in again. So we have to build our capacity for healthy connection, but we need that awareness first.
The awareness, right? The awareness is the key. And there's so many people running around without listening to you speak. And I think the way that you contextualize it so quickly, so understandably, is just, I know that people are going to listen to this episode and walk away different people, because once you have the awareness, it doesn't go away. And you grow over time more irritable and uncomfortable just being aware. So even if you do nothing in the next week or month or year, that awareness is still there. And that door for you to open it and do something differently or learn more or whatever goes next, you know, it waits for you. It waits for me. I don't know why I'm speaking as if this doesn't apply to me. It 100% applies to me. It applies to all of us. Like there's still, I assume you would say yourself, there's still things that get poked at and require awareness and action and change as you make your way through life, maybe.
I will always be healing. I think the level of what I've gone through means that my life will always be about healing and I'll continue to grow and evolve. But for me, I've got a place where there's no shame in that. And I love what you said in about it's just waiting for you. And so I believe illumination is eternal. Once you see, you cannot unsee. And I also believe that we build capacity slowly over time. So just because we can see that something needs to change or that there's an avenue for us to walk down, it's important to learn we do not have to rush down it and drop everything else and fix it and get to the other side. That's a block to our healing. And so if all we do is stay curious, allow the illumination to unfold and build the capacity to take one step forward at a time, that's how we actually change the way we're living and breathing here. And that's when we enter a state of embodiment or grace. We're not rushing to force ourselves or fix ourselves or be who we're not. We're just compassionate.
I really appreciate that. On your social media recently, you posted about healing, and it was a quote that said, in the early stages of healing, it's common to create a cocoon. Can you share what this cocoon means and furthermore, how we know when it's time to leave this cocoon?
The cocoon is kind of like a safe space. So when you realize that a lot of the influences in the external world are not really helping you on your journey to heal, it's common to create this cocoon and take the space to begin to make sense of things, to let go of past pain, to rest. Most of us are really living in a very big state of burnout. And so we find we kind of don't want to be engaging with certain people. We don't want to be so much out there. We just want to be healing and looking after ourselves. And it's a really important stage. But I often say safe spaces that are not evolutionary can become cages. So if we're in our cocoon too long, it ends up blocking us. It ends up becoming a bit of a prison. Because in the end, the goal of healing is to create a life where we feel empowered and alive and curious and playful. And that means being in relationships with people. And it means trying new things and expanding our horizons. And if we're in our safe cocoon, we can't do that. But it can feel really scary to emerge. You know, think about being born, right? It's terrifying to be born. You're in this lovely, safe womb and you come out and there's this big, scary world and you don't know what's going to happen. And healing is kind of like being reborn again and again and again, all these new versions of yourselves. And when you sort of step out without, say, some of the past trauma or this new version of yourself, it can feel scary because we don't know how to exist as this version of ourselves. We don't know how to relate as this version of ourselves. It's terrifying. And will people like it or not? Will we fail? And so I often suggest when we begin to step out of the cocoon, we can do it slowly and we can always come back to the cocoon. So the cocoon never leaves. So once we've learned how to build one, we can always come back. And this testing, this putting our toes into the waters of a world where we are sort of more empowered or more alive, that's really important for building resilience and building self-trust. So in the end, we're needing to teach ourselves, oh, I can show up as this version of myself. I can look after myself. I can make healthy choices and choose the right people and live a life that's a little more sustainable. But we don't know that. We have to go on a journey of proving it to ourselves.
I love how you put that and called the cocoon a cage at some point, you know, how just time at some point that shift happens. It reminded me of a best friend of mine who lost her mother abruptly about a year ago, and it has thrown her out of the nest for a bunch of reasons. And one of the things that she did to take care of self was go completely off social media. And this is not like an influencer or anything like that. It was just a, you know, regular person who uses social media. And we were talking over coffee and this really stuck with me. And the way you said just speaks so clearly to it, but she's brilliant. And I was like, how was your last couple of months being off social media? She's like, it was 6 months. It was great, but I think I'm ready to come back. And I was like, really? Because whenever I go off social media, I feel like I could like never come back. We have different relationships to social media. But she was like, yeah, it's kind of like that, like how far can the pendulum swing type of a thing. And I just never thought of it like that. And it's kind of the same thing is like, how long can you not interact with the world? You know, you said go back to relationships. Social media is here, whether we like it or not. It's how we relate to each other. It's how we get information, news, learn about what our friends are doing, all of that. Like it's an interface that is there. And I just never heard anybody put it so the way she did. And I never heard somebody put it the way you did, but it feels to me like the same type of a thing.
I think if we can know and believe that we always have the choice to come and go and create change, then everything's okay. And we also learn that everything is a stage. And so we will all continue to go through stages. Nothing's finite. And if we allow ourselves to live this way, and if we trust that we can maintain that sense of agency and choice, we're in control of our lives. So we don't need to be afraid anymore of getting stuck, of getting trapped, getting hurt.
On your social media as well, there was something that you posted that you stated your belief that is the common statement that we see thrown around, especially in the last couple of years on social media, is that you attract what you manifest is actually harmful. I don't know if I said that right, but what Natalia wrote on her social media was that statement, you attract what you manifest, actually is harmful. Can you explain why that's harmful? I'd love to hear your approach on it.
There's these popular sentiments in self-help that until you love yourself, no one's going to love you. That's kind of what underpins it all. And so until you do this certain level of healing work, you're not valid or worthy, and you're just never going to get what you need. And it goes against human nature. It's very shaming. And there's a lot of shaming messages that actually come through the modern self-help paradigm. If you think about how humans develop, when we are a baby, when we're born, it's actually through the reflection and care of our mother and ideally our greater family and our community that show us we are inherently worthy. And we develop our sense of worth and self-esteem through being loved. and cared for. It's not the other way around. And so for those of us that didn't get that early on, we often feel like we don't love ourselves and perhaps that we even hate ourselves. And then if we're being told, well, if you don't love yourself, if you don't have self-love, no one's going to love you. That's pretty devastating because you can't just force it upon yourself. You can't just pretend that you love yourself, though many people do, but it's not real. So I might smile and say, I love me in the mirror. But if there's a voice inside my head saying, oh, I hate myself, it's not true. And while, of course, we all do want to learn to care for ourselves and love ourselves, I think it's important that the message that people hear is that we are always inherently worthy of love and care and opportunity, even if we don't really believe it. And so to perpetuate the people's thoughts, I'm just not worthy, therefore I don't deserve it, I'm not going to get it, that traps them into a shame spiral, and we can't heal when we're in a shame spiral.
I think that that's really, really, really great advice and helps us take a step back from the popular paradigms that are kind of furthering one half of the population. And I don't even mean this 50-50, but the people that have made it to the other side, right? It's like, great, I'm here, I attract what I manifest. I think there's a level of truth to it. It's not like it's all BS, but to the other people that are nowhere near that, it's not even like a breadcrumb for them to work with. It's putting them in a state of spiral and feeling so far from that place. So that makes a lot of sense.
So many people read messages like this, and if they are living in a state of trauma, it just makes them feel hopeless. Like, oh, well, I'm never going to get that then. I'm never going to get the love. I'm never going to get the opportunity. I'm never going to get the choice for any of these things that I want because I hate myself so much. So why don't I just not bother?
The final question that I have for you today is, you stand by the mantra, heal your trauma, change the world. What does that mean to you?
I believe that our own healing is the blueprint for the social change that we wish to create. Most of us want to see a kinder, more inclusive, more intelligent world. But if we haven't reached a certain level of our own healing, we continue to perpetuate cycles of threat and exclusion and inequity because our trauma is leaking into dynamics. And when we do enough healing work to be able to contain our bias and our trauma, and also to not play into other people's, we become beacons of peace and power, and we can learn to show up so that every interaction that we have is a very beautiful intervention that takes us towards the world we want to see.
If I had your lens on, or like if I had your brain on at all times, like I understand everything that you're saying, but then I walk into the real world and I might forget all of that. I might forget when I hear somebody say something harmful, not inclusive, you know, what I might just think, wow, they're an a-hole. But through your lens, it's they're dealing with unprocessed trauma. Do you walk around every day with your professional brain on? Or are you sometimes ejected into regular life where you think like, you know, this person's just being an a-hole?
I am a regular, messy, complex human. So absolutely, I still get triggered and I still move into judgment. But I do have a conscious practice of trying to catch myself when I move into judgment and come back to, well, why? So when I'm able to see that someone is being dysfunctional or an a-hole, as you say, I'll try to come out of judgment, but I will have a very, very, very strong boundary. So I'm not interested in engaging with people unless there is a much bigger purpose that aren't able to offer me or others a certain level of respect. I'm a regular human, I promise.
You are, but I think, you know, when you spoke about that boundary, I like felt it. You know, it's like I am compassionate, but I am also protective. Like it came through your voice and I could definitely see you shifting gears a bit to most importantly, protect and hold space for self and for others. So thank you for sharing that. I think we learned just from listening to the power of your voice and that like ferocity, for lack of a better word, come through, because it's not always easy to sit peacefully and listen to the words that are thrown around us and the people around us, you know, and our relationships to the people and all of that. So thank you so much. I've learned so much from our time together. I'm so grateful from it. And is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
No, oh, I think it's been a beautiful conversation and really textured. So thank you so much for having me. It's been a lovely time.
I cannot wait for your second book. And as always, I'm going to put Natalia's information below, both her social media and her first book. And as soon as that second book is out, you better let us know, okay?
Thank you so much.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested, cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.